Thank you for listening to the Fields Brothers Show.
Well, I'm Roger Fields. Welcome to the Fields Brothers Show. I'm here with Jeff, my younger biological brother.
Hello.
We're in Central Kentucky. We are two recovering pastors with no known history of scandal or anything else like that or related to that. And we're not the Doobie Brothers, not the Marx Brothers, not the Warner Brothers, but the Fields Brothers. And we just talk about, you know, life on this side of the cross and just the amazing grace of God that he's lavished upon us through what Jesus did for us on the cross. And we talk about other stuff, too. Just kind of whatever comes across our path the week before. So, anyway, Jeff. Now, one thing, first of all. I am absolutely energized on top of the world tonight. Ask me why.
I'll ask you why, then I'll tell you. I learned something a little while ago that's a little public service announcement. But, okay, so why are you on top of the world?
Because my shop is cleaned and reorganized.
I saw you posted
that. And my office is cleaned and reorganized.
I haven't seen the office. Yes. I'll need to see the office before I leave here.
I tell you what, nothing like finally getting, you know, here's the secret. If you want to, if you're putting something off, here's the secret. When you're getting ready to do something, it doesn't matter whether you're starting a new exercise routine.
Pandemic wasn't enough. You know, being quarantined for a year, pandemic wasn't enough to get you
I didn't participate in the pandemic, okay. So I don't know what I can tell you. So anyway, all the friction is at the beginning. So for instance, if you're wanting to start walking regularly, all the friction is just starting. If you actually get up out of your chair, put your shoes on, walk out the door, you'll probably take a
battle's
walk.
Half over.
If you
at
take
that point,
if you take the first 2 minutes, if you decide to come back in the house, then fine, come back in the house. And just starting something is where all. Once you start it, I mean, the battle's half
would not
over.
Argue
the battle's
with that.
Like 90% over. So anyway, so what is your public service announcement? I can only imagine.
If you go to Qdoba and you ask for the chicken, you might want to specify the. Which chicken? They have a spicy chicken now. And I assume when you just order the burrito with chicken, they would give you the run-of-the-mill
regular chicken. And you weren't prepared for that.
If that was not the spicy chicken, then I sure don't want to taste the spicy chicken.
Really? But,
so I think they gave us the spicy chicken. So,
all right.
But I learned my lesson. So it's a small problem.
Now,
but
I have a test that just hit me this week, and I'll tell you how this came upon me, where you could tell a true believer by one simple question. Okay. And all you got to do is give them one word, a five-letter word, and ask them to pronounce that word.
Oh.
Okay. If they can
pronounce
it.
What's it start with?
Okay, I'm gonna give you the word.
Okay. Well, I was gonna try.
And
to
I know, I know you'll know how to pronounce it, but I'll tell you why.
So you're gonna spell it for me.
I'm gonna spell it for you. Okay. And wait a minute before you answer, so if people are out there, they can think about how to pronounce it.
All
okay.
Right.
So here's the word, A G. A P E.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now that's the word. A G A P E. Okay. How do you pronounce that?
Agape. It's a Greek word.
Now, how many people have you known that, you know, whatever, they didn't grow up in church, they certainly didn't go to Bible college, pronounce it agape.
Yeah.
Okay. This hit me the other day because I was going, had to turn in Lexington on Agape Street. My GPS lady says, go up, you know, 100 feet, turn right on Agape.
Agape. Well, okay.
She's not saved. My GPS lady does not know the Lord, or she would know how to pronounce Agape. So, anyway, I mean.
Yeah, I have seen that on the street. I didn't remember where it was, but I never. A lot of times the GPS voices say.
Oh,
have funny
I know, but that one's pretty common. Anyway, so I think it's funny. If you're in church very long, you're going to hear about the word agape, the love of God, and you're going to say, but not
there really is a inside lingo, language that those of us who grew up in it,
take it for granted.
Yeah. We can't really appreciate it.
Yeah,
and to see ourselves, it's also that way with church services.
Yeah,
you know, we do things, you know, we've grown up and then the church I pastor for a while, you know, you just certain tradition we don't think anything of. But when if you go on vacation or something, you go visit some other church, you're like, well, that's strange. Why do they do that? Because we're not used to seeing it. We don't realize other people are saying the same thing about our deal.
Right.
And
you do have your inside that stuff. Yeah, that you know.
That's why when we wrote our book, we tried really hard to avoid inside what we call it insider language. But there are a lot of terms and. I was watching a TV show back or a news thing a few months ago, and someone mentioned Vacation Bible School, and a couple of people in the news panel had a couple adults had no idea what, I mean, it sounded funny to them. They had never heard of Vacation Bible School. And yeah. You think about that, if you've never heard of that,
yeah,
that would be kind of a funny sounding term. Yeah. Vacation Bible School?
You put vacation in the word school, even in the same term, it's kind of like, what is it? Is it vacation or is it school?
But I forget, there's a lot of people that have not heard that. A lot of people just haven't heard any of the language, some of the terms that we're used to. So that's interesting.
All right, before we jump into a major topic here, I want to give you something else here that I heard this week that was really pretty fascinating. This is a new take on David and Goliath. Okay?
New take on David and Goliath.
Totally okay. new
I
take.
Thought we had already exhausted everything
no,
you can know about David
not
and Goliath.
Exhausted this. Okay. All right. Now, first of all, I just want to say I believe that the gist of the story is still the same. I believe God gave David the victory over Goliath. I mean, just the way the scripture says. But we've kind of depicted this as you got this big old mean Goliath who could kill anybody, and this poor little David, this poor little shepherd boy with this pitiful little slingshot, you know. Well, let me give you some other things to think about. First of all, David had already used the sling to kill a lion and a bear.
Yeah, so he was skilled.
He was pretty good at this. And did you know that in that day, in battle, there were people called slingers that were good at this? This was a common thing in that day. They would take these slings and put a pretty good-sized rock in it, swing it around their head, and a lot of them were known to be able to hit a bird in flight. I mean, these people were good with this, and David was apparently one of those.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so David was pretty good with this thing. It wasn't like he was going into battle completely helpless.
Okay, all right.
Now, there's a theory. Now, this is a theory that back then there was known that there was some kind of a disease you can get that lodges in your head that would produce a growth hormone, and you would grow a lot taller than everybody else. Okay,
so I see where you're going with this.
What?
Goliath had that growth hormone. That's why he was taller.
Yeah, he was taller. Okay. But guess what else the growth hormone does? They know that it also
vulnerable in the head.
No, it affects your eyesight. Okay, so Goliath. Now, listen to this though. So, what's Goliath say to David? Come over here. Come here. So he was big and tough, but he liked the hand to hand combat. Now, David didn't want to do that because obviously he turned down Saul's armor. He goes, I don't want that. You know, he didn't want close up combat.
So Goliath was did not have great eyesight.
Maybe not. Think of this. He says, "Why do you come at me with sticks?" Well, David didn't have any sticks. Okay, he may have had a shepherd's staff, maybe. But he didn't have a bunch of sticks, so why does Goliath say that? Well, maybe. And Goliath keeps saying, come over here. Come here closer. You know, like he says, he wants to fight him up close.
Yeah.
And so it just could be that while Goliath was a powerful warrior up close, he was a little bit vulnerable at a distance. David took advantage of that and sunk that rock right in his forehead and battle over. So all I'm saying is, you know, it could be that although God absolutely helped orchestrate that victory, that, you know, that David used some common sense, too. You know, he used some logic that he was going to kill him with the way he knew how to do it. He wasn't going to go and try to do close hand-to-hand combat with armor that wasn't even his. He hadn't even tested yet. And so, anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting.
I'm trying to take that even further, and I'm not having any success doing that thing. Obviously, David is the type of Christ, so what we don't, you know, we used to see that story and think, okay, we need to be like David. Well, no, we can't be like David, but Jesus Christ was like David. He did defeat the enemy. We're in him, so he is our victory. So I'm trying to think in terms of Jesus defeating Satan. Is there anything parallels there? And I'm not coming up with anything.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
If I do, I'll let you know.
So. I just think that, you know, God is not, here's my takeaway from it. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, God does not work outside of just a reasonable approach to things, you know, even when he does a miracle. I mean, it's okay to think through something and say, this makes sense, let's do it this way. I think that's kind of what David did. It makes sense that he would keep his distance, use a slingshot, and kill him the same way he killed the lion and the bear. You know, he wasn't a close-up combat kind of guy. So anyway.
Paul used the Roman, he used the common.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of his Roman citizenship, he used that to his advantage. And so,
and I've always been intrigued too. The children of Israel had manna that was fed to them 6 days a week, you know, double portion on the sixth day to, you know, carry over through the Sabbath. But when they entered the promised land, the manna stopped because they didn't need manna. They had the milk and honey of the promised land.
What this reminds me of, this is not what you're going to add, but, and I don't know what, there's really no point of this, but remember the commentaries by William Barclay?
Yeah.
And in Bible college, he was always kind of considered, okay, he's great on the epistles and all this, but you got to watch him in the gospels, because almost every miracle.
He has another explanation.
He wouldn't come right out and say it was this other way. He would just kind of plant another idea of how this might have happened. And so that's why we kind of, he was viewed in our circles with a little bit of a, a little bit of a hesitancy there.
Yeah,
on those,
for sure.
Reminded me of that.
But. You know, I've also, this hit me this week, that a lot of, I think your spiritual life is you get in a lane, and it's a lane of works. We got to do stuff for God. We got to perform. God's evaluating us. It's all about our ability to follow Christ, be like Him. Y'all saw a thing in Facebook. You know, this is stuff that just, I'm always torn on whether or not to get into these discussions. He said, you know, being a Christian is not like being like other Christians. It's being like Jesus. Something. Anyway, I think I did weigh into that one. I said, well, actually, it's neither. You know, it's about accepting what Jesus has done for us on the cross. But I hate these dichotomies are set up. Yeah. That are not. But anyway, I forgot where I was going with all this.
Well, it made me think of something else I was going to bring up at some point. So you want me to give you another few seconds here to gather your thoughts?
Or? Oh, no. Okay, so you're not. So what happens is you get in a lane.
Okay.
And we think in terms of that lane. I want somebody, when I hear a message, where there's a sermon or something on Facebook, somebody shares, I want to know how to function in that lane. I want to know how to go further, how to read my Bible more, pray more, do something more. I want to know about my lane. The problem with the gospel is it keeps you in a totally different lane. And the problem that people have, I think, is that they keep wanting to go back to that other lane because the other lane is a lot more familiar. And we've talked about the fact that there's more control in that lane. That's just a lane we're comfortable with. And so you take them outside of this lane. This is a much better lane, the gospel lane, that's all about grace, all about what God has done for you through Jesus, not about what you do for Him. That's what we've said many times. That's on this side of the cross. The cross was the dividing line. It's all about what God has done for us through Jesus. That's the lane. And so the book of Hebrews would say the other lane is now obsolete, the old covenant, the old way of doing things. That lane is, but people still want to go down that road. And so and I just think it's, for a lot of people, it's tough to change lanes.
And it is so different than what, you know, so it's like you're trying to fit the other lane into the lane I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
It's kind of like trying to fit the old, you know, the new wine and old wineskins type of thing. But what that reminds me, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, but I got to thinking about it a little bit more of why is it so difficult for people to come to see grace after years of not seeing it? And we talked about how that is difficult in all this. And I heard something the other day that's kind of in a different area, but I think it carries into this. And I don't know that we talked about this specifically, but the idea of the concept of sunk cost. You've heard the phrase good money after or bad money after good. Mm-hmm. So if someone say building a business or something and it's not going well and they've already lost a bunch of money, it is hard to admit that to cut your loss. Mm-hmm. It's hard to cut your loss and admit. Yeah. And there's just the natural tendency is to want to think, no, this can work.
Yeah.
So you pour more money into that or you can have a view on whatever in life. You know, this is the way. And so when you've believe that way for so long,
it becomes invested in it.
It's a sunk cost.
Yeah.
And the more you have invested, and I heard years ago that, tell me if you've heard of this, for the Mormon church, that's part of the reasoning for having the young men do these mission trips and spend all this time going door to door. So by the time they are, I don't know exactly what age they do that, I assume by their early mid-20s, they are really invested in that. And when you've spent that much time and done that much work down that path, it makes it harder to say no.
Yeah.
So I think the same principle applies, whether it's business, good money after bad, or to when you've spent so much time and so many years down that path and invested that and kind of feeling good about that, that this is what I've done to admit that I'm going to, so I guess we need to spiritually cut our losses. Maybe that would be the phrase here, doctrinally cut our losses.
So. I agree. And that sets me up for this topic. Okay, I saw this on Facebook. There's a Facebook page called Geeks Under Grace. And so somebody asked the question. In fact, I may even just read this question to you. I think I can pull this up here. I can't pull up. Basically, they said, is it okay if you've been hurt by church to walk away to not attend church?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, boy, I mean, it lit up. Last I saw 134 responses. Got pretty heated. The moderator threatened to shut the whole discussion down.
What did we do before Facebook?
What did we do? And so it was so interesting to hear so many. Some people would just say, no, you can't walk away from church no matter what. You got to hang in there because, you know, there are good churches, and then it's all about going to church. Some of them would say, well, yes, you can. But one guy said, here's my favorite. He goes, you can walk away from church, but it's like a zebra leaving the pack. The lions are going to eat you up. And he put a picture of the lions eating up a zebra. Like, you can do that. But, you know, and so, but what happens in church many times is that after you've been there a few years, you get invested in that church. You put a lot of money sometimes in that church, a lot of service, a lot of hours, a lot of emotional investment. It could be you find out your church is not real sold out on the gospel. They may not believe that Jesus paid the full price for salvation. They might not believe anything like that. And so sometimes you get to a point where you may be thinking, I'm not sure that my church is, or what happens too is a lot of churches do run into trouble. I mean, I've heard so many story now where the pastor is caught in immorality, or he just leaves, or the church splits. I mean, a lot of times it just ends in some bad stuff.
It's almost more the norm than the exception.
It is becoming the norm that something will happen. Now, sometimes it's just that the pastor decides to leave, go to another church, and the church just flounders after that. They can't get somebody in with the same whatever draw that the original pastor had. But the point is that, you know, it's easy to blow people off and say, well, you just need to stick in there and hang in there. And, you know, first of all, you don't know what their church is teaching or what they're all about, number one. Number two, it's easy to say that if, you know, you haven't had that happen to you.
Yeah.
You know? And, I mean, I've been in several churches that blew up because pastor did things that he shouldn't have done, you know, and it's not fun. And
I don't guess, but I have. You know, I never thought about that. I've not been in any.
I have, yeah.
I've only tended to see one, two, three, four, or five. I've only attended four or five different congregations on a regular basis in my life.
Again. Well, I haven't attended many more than that, maybe six or seven, but of that six or seven, at least I think four of them blew up.
Wow.
So the point is this. So here's my analogy. Yeah, it must be me. So my analogy is this. Now here's, so he said, you know, and I've really kind of tried to be honest about this, where does church attendance, now I don't like the word church, it's really no such thing as church attendance. It's attending a meeting or a congregation.
Yeah.
So that's when we are the church, you don't attend what we are, you know, we do the attending. But where does it fit in, if at all? I know of stories, a lot of stories like you do, where people have crashed and burned because of things that have gone on in their churches, or they just haven't grown from it, or they've been anti-gospel. But there are, I do know people, and I do know stories, particularly of young believers, where a church has served them well. Mm-hmm. You know, they met people that became an encouragement to them. It gave them a new focus in life. And yes, sometimes they were too focused on just their own service rather than what God's done for them. But there were still some healthy things that came from that for a lot of people.
A lot of times it's not the actual programs themselves.
Right.
You know, they look back, okay, what did you gain from it? Well, it was those relationships. Right. It wasn't necessarily the official program type of deal. But.
So here's my new analogy. For a lot of people, I know this analogy will break down, but for a lot of people, church attendance is the training wheels of your faith.
Okay.
For a lot of people, it does serve a purpose early on.
Mm-hmm.
I think for most people, vast majority, I would say, it runs its course. After a while, you know, you're in this thing and you've invested in all, and then it becomes all about your service. Let's build this church. Let's get it bigger. Let's get more people. Let's do, you know. And so where it starts off, I think, to be fairly innocent and for some people healthy, ends up being unhealthy. And I think for some people, put the training wheels on, but know when to take the training wheels off and when to possibly walk away. That's
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I'm not sure, because the other thought that comes to my mind is how quickly, you know, if it's a new believer like that, you know, we unknowingly condition them to depend on that group.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
For their strength, for their encouragement, for their teaching, rather than just enjoy being loved by God and enjoy their Father and take some time to just know that. And so,
So what would you tell a new believer? So a new believer, somebody, maybe you led them to the Lord, maybe somebody else helped them to understand, and they got it. You know, they understand the gospel. They understand the grace, what Jesus has done for them. Do you encourage them to be a part of a local church?
I see it as optional. And I see it. I heard this. I may have mentioned this one other time podcast, but I think it fits. I heard someone, I forget now where I heard this, compared it to the verse that says, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision is anything. Mm-hmm. What counts is a new creation in Christ. I think that's Galatians maybe.
Yeah.
And so I don't see it as either way. Church attendance, you know, it's neither good nor bad.
But what's the verse everybody's going to lay on you, Jeff? What's the verse? There's one verse
right. In
the entire Bible that everybody uses to address this topic. Hebrews
10:25. And you want to confess that before this podcast, you had to ask me
what reference it was. I just couldn't remember what chapter and verse. Yes, you did. I couldn't remember for sure. As which shows a little bit about me, I guess. But
thought you were going to keep that a secret, huh?
No. No, I knew you'd bring it up. But
Roger did not know where to find the verse. Forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. We always remember the King James Version, too.
So. Or the meeting. This is like an English Standard Translation, English Standard Version. But so how do you handle it? So tell me how you handle that verse. Do not, Jeff, forsake if you are not attending a scheduled church service.
Okay, you just changed the
every week. What? Well,
Didn't say anything about scheduled in Hebrews 10:25.
No, but that's what we're talking about when we talk about church attendance. We're talking about scheduled meetings. If you don't attend
that's
for
what
most people.
But I don't think that's what Hebrews 10 is talking about.
I agree with you. I agree with you, but that's my point, is that we always see Hebrews 10:25 as pertaining to the schedule.
Right.
When it's not.
Well, for one thing, it's another example of how quickly we can turn any verse into a new rule.
Yeah.
And we tend to do that with lots of stuff, and this would be one of them.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's kind of the one. It's almost like it's probably an indication that whenever there's one verse that everybody, whatever the topic is, whenever there's one verse that everybody goes to, that's probably a tip that maybe we're seeing this wrong. It's like the confession of sin.
Yeah.
You know,
everybody goes to
1 John 1:9, okay? If there's no other verses to go to.
Yeah. Or the James 2, without faith all works is dead. Right, everybody's got to go to that one. You know, so that's my verse.
Whatever the subject is, if there's only one verse that everybody goes to, maybe that's an indication that.
You know, I heard a Bible teacher one time say, one that you wouldn't agree with, but he did say one that I thought was pretty wise.
I think I know
what
you're going to say.
He said, out of two or three witnesses, and he said, if you can't find it at least twice in the Bible, you may have a problem, and that's maybe, not a bad point.
I remember you telling me about that one time,
and
I think I know who the Bible teacher was, but you told me that, and for some reason I ever remember that.
Yeah.
And so I've wondered, there may be something to that.
Yeah, there may be something to that.
And it's not that it's not important. It's just maybe an indication that maybe we're misunderstanding that and giving it more emphasis.
And it's easy to misunderstand, I think, one verse. You know, if there's something that's in there 2, 3, 4, 5 times, you think, okay, that's, you know, makes the case. But.
You know what different possibilities on the Hebrews. You know, I've heard, you know, the folks there were under persecution. So they're, you know, when you're under persecution and you can get together, you know, it becomes a little risky to get together. Yeah. And so saying, you know, don't give up on getting together. But what's often left out is the part that, you know, why we're supposed to get together. You know, the very next verse or the rest of that one, or I guess the rest of that one.
Yeah.
Or before it, you know, the verse before it, and let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works.
Yeah.
And then not forsaking the assembly of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another. And so much more as this you see the day approaching.
One another.
So, you know, if you go sit in a service and just watch a program up on stage and then talk about the weather to somebody on the way out, you know, that's not encouraging one another.
Right. Like, I mean, if you just go and sit in a seat or a pew, used to be pews, in a seat now, and you get up and you leave, you know, were you really fellowshipping? Were you partaking? I mean, you were just watching a performance or watching a program. You weren't engaged. Now, here's my question, too, is that, I mean, the fact is that, I mean, this is a weird, it's a world, weird world we live in, but on Facebook, you can do a lot of things a heck of a lot more proficiently on Facebook than you can attending a church.
Cheaper, too.
And cheaper. Okay. But for instance, let's say if you have an aunt that needs prayer for a gallstone operation, you're going to wait till Sunday, go to church, tell some people, hey, pray for me, or even get on the phone. You can post that thing on Facebook and it'll light up and you have all kinds of people encouraging you, praying for your aunt. I mean, just at the drop of a hat.
That doesn't count. That's just social media, Roger.
Yeah.
That doesn't count.
Well, And you can get messages. Just kidding. And I mean, some of my favorite messages, and I've told you this before, I've got a couple of guys on TikTok I listen to that are pretty good. And I'm thinking there's relatively short messages, but I'm thinking.
I think a lot of it comes, it's like other things, that where it riles up, the attitude in some people is they would feel guilty if they didn't go on a regular basis. Yeah. And they don't, and they're, and so they need to keep going or else they're going to feel guilty. And if I'm going to feel guilty, then you better feel guilty if you don't go.
Yeah.
But it really is, I think it's indicating that we supplant the role of Jesus Christ in life. That example you gave, or the other example a lot of people give, is, you pull a charcoal away from the fire, it's going to go out because it needs to be with the other charcoals. But
I forgot about that.
The source of life is not one another.
Yeah.
We encourage each other to point to Christ, we point one another to Christ. The source of our life is Christ. We don't get life. The life doesn't flow from I remember Wayne Jacobson wrote this. I really liked it. The life doesn't flow from the body to the individual. The life flows from Christ through the individual to the body. And so that's a gift. That's an overflow. That's a blessing. And when we start to look to the congregation, to the body, to do for us what only Jesus Christ can do, that's when it gets messed up, and that's when a lot of them end up blowing up.
I think that's absolutely the truth.
Full disclosure, for what it's worth, I do attend. My wife and I attend a congregation pretty much every Sunday morning. And actually, coming up here pretty soon, I'm bringing the morning message of all things.
Are you really?
Been a while since I've done that.
When is this happening?
Coming up when? July 25th. So I'm thinking when this will be. That'll be after this. It'll be on YouTube, actually. Someone could watch it on YouTube.
I bet it's not the weekend the Barbasol Golf Championship is going
this weekend.
On. That would be a little bit of a conflict there, wouldn't it? Yeah. He probably asked you to speak that Sunday. No, I can't be doing that. No,
it actually was not. I was not. Okay. So it's the 25th of July.
Am I allowed to come?
Well, I just don't want to look. Big crowd shows up just for me.
Just me. I'm not going to just
mom's coming. I told mom she could come.
Since mom's coming, I'm not allowed to come. Okay, I see how it is.
This is not a pack-a-pew contest.
Okay, all right.